This is apologetics number 9, and I've called it the cloud of Jehovah's presence. And I think we better leave a discussion of the cover until later in the study, because I don't think you'll understand it very well at this moment. Turn to page 1. The cloud of Jehovah's presence. The printed text in this apologetics course is the American Standard Version of 1901, unless otherwise noted. This is necessary because the King James text does not use Jehovah where it should. The hand-printed text is from my consistent translation. Now, this is important for you to know because King James does not normally use the name Jehovah in the Old Testament. It changes it to Lord, which of course is very inaccurate. The American Standard Version corrected this problem in 1901 and translates it Jehovah. That's why in this course we will use the American Standard Version, because the King James Version is incorrect in almost every passage, and I want you to keep Jehovah paramount in your thinking. Now, the particular passage to be studied is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Now, not so much particular passage as the major passage on which is bringing about this whole study. Let's put it that way. And it begins in verse 13, and we better read it first to get our start together. But we would not have you ignorant, brethren, concerning them that fall asleep, that ye sorrow not, even as the rest who have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also that are fallen asleep in Jesus will God bring with him. For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we that are alive, that are left, unto the coming of the Lord shall in no wise precede them that are fallen asleep. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God. And the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we that are alive, that are left, shall together with them be caught up in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. Now coming to the margin. The subject of the rapture comes from this passage. While the word rapture is not in the text, it is used to express the catching up into the clouds. The rapture itself is not questioned. In other words, that's pretty straightforward, that they're caught up in the clouds. Now, the questions that are raised are these. When does this occur? And who caught it? Who is caught up? And who are those to rise? Is the rapture secret? Where do they go next? Why does Jesus have to come down to cloud level to get them into heaven? That's an interesting question. In other words, why didn't he just take them straight into heaven in one jump? Why come in the clouds to get them up that high and then take them the rest of the way? Most important is the rapture before the tribulation. Now, that is covered a little bit in Apologetics 8 on the tribulation. We have to do these things, as I've explained before, one subject at a time. And that way, maybe we can arrive at some very good conclusions that will keep us very straight. We will consider other questions as we proceed. Now note verse 16 and 17, particularly in the consistent translation. Because the Lord himself, with stimulating cry, with voice of an archangel, and with the trumpet of God, will descend from heaven. And the dead ones in Messiah, notice that change, will stand up again for themselves firstly. There's another important change. Stand up again for themselves rather than rise. That's very important. Thereafter, we the ones living, namely the ones being left around, shall be seized at the same time with them in clouds with reference to meeting of the Lord into air. And thus we shall be always with Jehovah. Now, you see those rather so big asterisks, they are really, in front of Messiah, in front of Jehovah. If you study the course Jehovah, you'll have an explanation as to why those words are translated that way. But in the New Testament, wherever the word kurios, Lord, shows up without an article, except in the vocative case, I have translated it Jehovah, and the proof of that is in the Jehovah Court. Let's go to page 2. Now, the groundwork for all of this is laid in the Old Testament. While this course will consider every use of the word cloud in the New Testament, it is first necessary to consider some uses of cloud in the Old Testament. The Holy Spirit used 3 different Hebrew words for cloud in the Old Testament. And these 3 words, by the way, are used, each one of them, a good number of times. The translators, unfortunately, make no difference in the translation. They just keep calling them all cloud. Now, the first word, ab, is a nimbus cloud or rain cloud. And you have a good example of that in Psalm 77:17. We're not interested in that word, so I didn't put any of that in. You can look it up if you like. Look them up in your concordance if you want to see a goodly number of them. A shakak is a thin cloud, a cirrus cloud, above 20,000 feet. A good example is in the King James in Job 35:5. American Standard Version has changed that a little bit. And we're not interested in either one of those two. What we're interested in is this third one, anan. It is this word in which we're interested because it is the cloud of Jehovah's presence. Now, I'm going to proceed to prove that to you. I've made the statement, but I have not given you proof. The first uses are in Genesis, and there are only 4. Now, in the New Testament, we're not as fortunate as in the Old to have this kind of separation. But you're going to see that this Hebrew word has to do with the cloud of Jehovah's presence, and the first 4 uses in Genesis clear it up. Now, look at Genesis 9. And God spake unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, And I, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, every beast of the earth with you, of all that go out of the ark, even every beast of the earth. And I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, This is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud. Now there it is, Genesis 9:13. First use of this word cloud. And it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud, second time, over the earth, and that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. There's the third one. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. And the bow shall be seen in the cloud. All right, now there you have them. All 4 of them in Genesis. And I will look upon it that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, This is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. So I put this big pillar of cloud, a special cloud, over the ark as it protected the ark, and his bow was set in the cloud. Now, when you see the rainbow, usually in a nimbus cloud or on other forms of cloud, depending how it's reflected by the sun, when it's raining a little bit in some place. That is, the light shines through the raindrops and causes the colors of the rainbow. Now, that is in a dull form, and I tell you why I say that in just a minute. But it's in a dull form compared to this rainbow, which was extremely bright in this special cloud. Now, this is not the kind of cloud you see. You never see the rainbow in this cloud. This rainbow in this cloud was a sign of God's presence, and that's why I called it the cloud of Jehovah's presence. And you see down at the bottom of the cloud, I've put in some lightning because it was fire enfolding itself. I don't know how you do that, but this cloud that I got a picture of automatically had the lightning in there, and so I left it there so it gives that idea. Now, underneath the picture, we do not really learn that this cloud is the cloud of Jehovah's presence until we look at the uses of this word in Exodus. For a moment, we will skip to Ezekiel, where we have more description. Now, here you see the cloud, and now this time, much more description. Ezekiel 1. I looked, and behold, a stormy wind came out of the north, a great cloud with a fire enfolding itself. Now, that's the way you have it. Now, if you like, you can take your color markers and very easily color this big cloud red in all of these cases, and it'll make your book kind of colorful. And you can put some kind of a color over the rainbow to brighten it up. And your book will be a little more fun to study. And a brightness round about it, and out of the midst thereof, as it were, glowing metal, out of the midst of the fire. Out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man. Now, I think you've got to be careful that you don't assume that this cloud is a vapor-type cloud. It may be, it may not be. This cloud may have a structural form about which we know nothing, and it may support this kind of weight in it and have nothing to do with rain, because this cloud, Anan, is not a cloud word that's used for rain. Let's go on. 22. And over the head of the living creature there was the likeness of a firmament, like a terrible crystal to look upon, stretched forth over their heads above. Now, I've tried to put the cherubim in there. Now, you'll see bigger pictures like this if you do the Revelation 2 translation and commentary. You'll see the cherubim and the seraphim round about the throne. Now, verse 26. And above the firmament that was over their heads was the likeness of a throne, as the appearance of a sapphire stone. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness of the appearance of a man upon it above. And I saw, as it were, glowing metal, as the appearance of fire within it, round about, from the appearance of his loins and upward. And from the appearance of his loins and downward, I saw, as it were, the appearance of fire, and there was brightness round about him. And as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Jehovah. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard a voice of one that spake. Now here again, you have this word cloud, and he says, as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain. Now, this is a verse that I'm not prepared to digress on at the moment, but this is the same word that is used throughout Anan rather than the nimbus cloud, a special cloud. And this was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Jehovah. Now, I'm not able to do much with that for many, many reasons. One, my lack of Hebrew, one, my lack of time, and so forth. But now I've got a little help from the Jewish book and show you how the Jews connect this rainbow in the Zohar. Now, the Zohar are books that develop the spiritual aspect of Jewish thinking, and this is from Volume 1, page 245. The Judean said to him, "This is what my father said to me when he was on the point of departing this world." Now, look carefully. I've underlined it. Mark it with color. "Do not expect the coming of the Messiah until the rainbow will appear decked out in resplendent colors which will illumine the world." In other words, a much brighter rainbow than we're accustomed to. Only then expect the Messiah. We learn this from the words, "And I will look upon it that I may remember the everlasting covenant." Genesis 9:16. Now, you've already got that across the page. That is, at present, the bow appears in dull colors. Now, that's what I told you a few minutes ago. "Since it is only designed as a reminder that there shall be no return of the flood. But at that time, it will appear in its full panoply of colors as a bride does for her husband. And that will be to remember the everlasting covenant. The Holy One, blessed be He, will remember the covenant which is in exile, and he will raise her from the dust, as it is written, and they will seek the Lord their God and David their king. Also, but they shall serve the Lord their God and David their king, whom I will raise unto them." And he gives scripture, of course, each time. "That is, raise from the dust, In accordance with the text, I will raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen. The everlasting covenant will thus be remembered to be raised from the dust. My father also said that it is for that reason that in Scripture, the redemption of Israel and the remembrance of the rainbow are mentioned together as it is written, for as I have sworn that the waters of Noah shall no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee, nor rebuke thee. And they're quoting Isaiah. Now this is very interesting because they connect this to the presence of the Messiah. And when we read about the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, is it possibly the rainbow? Now this is an unusual cloud in many ways. Let's go on. Exodus 13:21. It shows up again. And Jehovah went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might go by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night departed not from before the people. Verse 21 underneath there. Jehovah went before them in a pillar of cloud. Therefore I called it the cloud of Jehovah's presence. Now, that's why I told you, wait till we get to Exodus. Since Jehovah went before them by day in a pillar of cloud, I think we're at perfect liberty to call it the cloud of Jehovah's presence. In Exodus 14, we see Jehovah defending Israel through the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud. And you go over to page 4 for that. Now here you see the cloud ahead of the pursuing chariot. The cloud of Jehovah's presence stopped the pursuit. They weren't able to get at the Israelites. Exodus 14. And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel removed and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud removed from before them and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel. And there was the cloud and the darkness, yet gave it light by night, that the one came not near the other all that night, all the night. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass in the morning watch that Jehovah looked forth upon the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of cloud, and discomfited the host of the Egyptians, and he took off their chariot wheels, and they drove them heavily. So the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for Jehovah fighteth for them against the Egyptians. And where you have those stars running along the side, those are Old Testament occurrences of this particular word for this particular cloud. This cloud has a darkness. It does blot out things from behind it. It does have fire enfolding in it, as we've seen from Ezekiel. Maybe we just can't understand it in great detail, but I think we're very safe in calling it the cloud of Jehovah's presence. The next reference to this cloud is in Exodus 16:10. Now we're going to show you why you can call this the glory cloud also. Here it is, Exodus 16:10. And it came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, behold, the glory of Jehovah appeared in the cloud. So since God's glory appeared in it, not only is it the presence of Jehovah, but it's also the glory cloud. And I think I'm justified in that. Let's go to Exodus 19:9. And Jehovah said unto Moses, lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and may also believe thee forever. And Moses told the words of the people unto Jehovah. And it came to pass on the third day, when it was morning, that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of a trumpet exceeding loud, and all the people that were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet God. And they stood at the nether part of the mount, and the Mount Sinai, the whole of it, smoked, because Jehovah descended upon it in fire. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. And when the voice of the trumpet waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. Now, I've made some notes here that are important. A lot of you read these scriptures before, but, you know, when you read them with emphasis on a particular word, they clear up a lot of things. Notice in this passage, one, Jehovah was in the cloud. Question, Father or Son or both? We'll see that in a minute. 2, verse 16, note the third day. The third day. Why? All right, number 3, the trumpet of verse 16. Louder and louder, okay? All right, now, verse 4, point 4, to meet God. Now, the Septuagint has a word that means meeting together. Now, this word is a compounded word. I didn't think to put this in English so you could see. I wanted you to see it in Greek, because in 1 Thessalonians 4:17, there is a meeting of God in the air when these people are caught up. Now, I don't care so much about whether you can say the word. The word is easy to say, but without English letters, maybe you can't. But go from the right-hand end of the word backwards, so to speak. Notice the first letters of these two words are alike. They are coming from right to left. First letters are alike, next letters are alike, next letter, next letter, next letter, next letter, next letter, and then you start to change. All right, now, that last part, in other words, that last seven letters, is exactly alike in both words. And these words are very similar. One is a meeting together, and the other is a meeting. And the reason I want to call this to your attention is at the very end of this apologetics, you're going to see this particular word stand out. 5, I want you to note the loudness of the trumpet in verse 19. 6, God answers Moses by a voice, and that's in verse 19. Now, this is Moses' first meeting with God in the cloud, but not his last. The next use of this word cloud is in Exodus 24, and again, Moses goes to Jehovah in the cloud. There are 4 uses of cloud in Exodus 24, then 2 in Exodus 33, and 1 in Exodus 34. And they're all going to be on page 5. All right, let us consider these. Now, this cloud came way down and engulfed the whole top of the mountain. And I tried to make the picture do this to show you things and make you aware of what's going on. Exodus 24. And Jehovah said unto Moses, come up to me into the mount and be there, and I will give thee the tables of stone and the law and the commandment which I have written, that thou mayest teach them. And Moses rose up, and Joshua his minister, and Moses went up into the mount of God, and he said unto the elders, tarry ye here for us until we come again unto you. Behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whosoever hath a cause, let him come near unto them. And Moses went up into the mount, and the cloud covered the mount. And the glory of Jehovah abode upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days. And the seventh day he called unto Moses out of the midst of the cloud. And the appearance of the glory of Jehovah was like devouring fire on the top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. And Moses entered into the midst of the cloud and went up into the mount, and Moses was in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. You notice he went up into the midst of the cloud, right up into this cloud. So whatever the cloud is constituted of, it is of such a nature that you can penetrate it, you can go into it, but I don't know how much else we even dare guess at. Now notice verse 16, the glory of Jehovah, he calls to Moses out of the midst of the cloud, and verse 17, mention again made of the glory. And verse 18, Moses actually entered the cloud. Now, Exodus 33:7. Now Moses used to take the tent and to pitch it without the camp, afar off from the camp. This has always been a problem passage. It's probably a tent used by Moses, not the tabernacle itself, which was not yet made. No other human being ever had a fellowship with Jehovah as did Moses. No one. No one, there's no exception to the rule. Moses, far and above everybody else. And he pitched it far off from the camp. and he called it the Tent of Meeting. And it came to pass, now his title is close to the other regular tabernacle, you see, so it is a little difficult for us to understand this difference. And it came to pass that everyone that sought Jehovah went out under the Tent of Meeting, which was without the camp. You see, the priesthood system wasn't in operation yet, the tabernacle not yet being finished, as I understand it. Verse 8. It came to pass that when Moses went out under the tent, that all the people rose up and stood, every man at his tent door, and looked after Moses until he was gone into the tent. And it came to pass when Moses entered into the tent, the pillar of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tent. And Jehovah spake with Moses, and all the people saw the pillar of cloud stand at the door of the tent. And all the people rose up and worshipped, every man at his tent door. That is, they bowed down in real worship because of the presence of Jehovah. That's why I call it the cloud of Jehovah's presence. And Jehovah spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. And he turned again into the camp, but his minister Joshua the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tent. Now this is, you can almost feel, if you're spiritually adept at feeling, you can almost feel the love of Jehovah for Moses as he comes and fellowships with Moses. Exodus 34:5. And Jehovah descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of Jehovah. And Jehovah passed by before him and proclaimed Jehovah, Jehovah, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness and truth. Now this verse, in the working up of this apologetics, this verse came to my attention for the first time. And to me, it was very thrilling. See if I can show you this whole picture. Because you've got Jehovah occurs five times in these two verses. And these verses answer the question as to who was in the cloud. So before examining these verses, note the Hebrew text. Now, you don't need to know Hebrew. Don't get all shook up about this at all. All you're going to do is you're going to make believe you're reading Hebrew. You start at the first line. You're going to go from your right hand to your left hand. Now, if you don't know your right hand, you better get shook up. But if you can get somebody to tell you which your right hand is, you'll know which way you're going. But it is important that Hebrew is in the reverse direction from English. Now, it's very obvious that right to left is the right direction to read, and we read backwards. It's the Jews came first, Hebrew comes first. So you read from right to left, then you go down your next line, and then next line. Now, in there, you have the word Jehovah, and I've tried to put those little arrows as close to the last letter of the word Jehovah as I could, you see? Now that means that the word Jehovah is a little bit to your right. That's the last letter. You're going right to left, and that last letter is where the arrow is, right at the tail end of Jehovah. So Jehovah begins with that little tiny letter up top called the Yod. It begins with that, Jehovah. And see the next one? There are two on the next line. And then there are two on the next line. So there's five of those all together. And I try to squeeze these things in without mixing up the Hebrew too badly. Now, between those last two, on the next to the bottom line, there's an asterisk, and there's a vertical line in there. And that vertical line I put underneath, that vertical line, right where the asterisk is called a disjunctive mark. That's a disjunctive mark. Now, I want you to get that. I want you to see the picture. And then I'm going to try to explain this verse to you, but I think you better let me turn the tape first.